ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। On this 12th day of September 2012 in Los Angeles, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Canto 7, Chapter 5, verse number 4. Ekadasura rat putram ankam aropya pandava paprachha katyatam vatsa manyate sadhu yad bhavan ekadasura ratputram ankamaropya pandava paprachha katyatam vatsa manyate sadhu yad bhavan Ekadasura ratputram ankamaropya pandava paprachya katyatam vatsa manyate saruyan bhavan ekadasura ratputram ankamaropya pandava paprachya katyatam vatsa manyate saruyan bhavan. Ekadasura ratputram ankamaropya pandava paprachya katyatam vatsa manyate saruyan bhavan. Surat putram paprachakatyatam vatsa manyate saruyadmavam. Anyone else? Ekada surat putram ankamaropya pandava paprachya katyatam vatsa manyate saruyan. Ladies, ekadasura ratputram ankamaropya pandava paprachya katyatam vatsa manyate saruyan bhavan ekadasura ratputram ankamaropya pandava paprachya katyatam vatsa manyate saruyan bhavan ekada. Once upon a time, Asurarat, the emperor of the Asuras, Putram, his son, Ankam, on the lap, Aropya, placing, Pandava, O Maharaj Yudhishthir, Paprachya, inquired, Katyatam, let it be told, vatsa, my dear son, manyate, considers, sadhu, the best, yat, that which, bhavan, your good self. Prabhu, I'm sorry, this is so noisy out there. Yeah, hold it back. Translation. My dear King Yudhishthir, once upon a time the king of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, took his son Prahlad on his lap and very affectionately inquired, "My dear son, please let me know what you think is the best of all the subjects you have studied from your teachers." Purport. Hiranyakashipu did not ask his young son anything that would be very difficult for him to answer. Instead, he gave the boy a chance to speak plainly about whatever he thought might be best. Prahlad Maharaj, of course, being a perfect devotee, knew everything and could say what the best part of life is. In the Vedas it is said, "Yasmin vigyate sarvam evam vigyatam bhavati." If one properly understands God, he can understand any subject matter very nicely. Sometimes we have to challenge big scientists and philosophers, but by the grace of Krishna, we emerge successful. It is impossible, practically speaking, for ordinary men to challenge scientists or philosophers concerning genuine knowledge. But a devotee can challenge them because the best of everything is known to a devotee by the grace of Krishna. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 10.11, "Tesham evanakam partham ahamajnanajam tamaha nashayamyatma bhavastho jnanadipena bhasvata." Krishna, who is situated in the core of everyone's heart as the Supersoul, dissipates all the ignorance from the heart of a devotee. As a special favor, he enlightens the devotee with all knowledge by putting before him the torch of light. Prahlad Maharaj, therefore, knew the best of knowledge, and when his father inquired from him, Prahlad gave him that knowledge. Prahlad Maharaj was able to solve the most difficult parts of problems because of his advanced Krishna consciousness. Therefore, he replied as follows. Om jnana tamarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So who remembers who's speaking here? Narada Muni. Narada Muni is telling Yudhishthir the story of Prahlad. Now, the drama here is that Prahlad is his disciple, right? Prahlad is a disciple. He learned everything from Narada Muni while he was still in the womb. So he's very proud of his disciple. And he's telling the story of how his disciple, Prahlad, is now challenging this huge demon, Hiranyakashipu, who happens to be his father. Now, another part of the drama of this moment is that this is the moment of truth. You remember the previous verses described how Prahlad was in the classroom with Chandanamaka, and he was learning all the ins and outs of demoniac philosophy, Machiavellian, who's the enemy, who's the friend, how to conquer the enemy and make alliances with the friends. This is what they're learning. And Prahlad, you can imagine, he's kind of, all right, you know. He's not really participating, but he hasn't revealed yet his true devotional nature. So now his father comes, or he comes to his father, and his father takes him on his lap, and like all parents, they want to know how you're doing in school, right? So they have the report cards, or they have the PTA. So in this case, it's individually, he's asking him, what have you learned? Now at this point, right, just see the situation, the drama. He's a devotee on the lap of the biggest demon in the universe, who has conquered everything. He even has all the demigods bowing down to him, except for Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Narada says, even I was bowing down. And he's taken over the functions of all these demigods. And he's practically seems to be invincible, at least on the material plane, to all intents and purposes. And here's this little child, 5 years old, and he knows very well, as soon as he speaks about Krishna, as soon as he talks about devotional service, he's going to enrage his father, because his father is declared archenemy of Hari, of Vishnu. His brother, Hiranyaksha, has been killed by Vishnu. And his whole purpose in life now is to conquer Vishnu and kill him if he can. That's why he performed all these austerities, become super powerful and immortal, which he thinks he is. So here's the moment of truth. Now, he could simply say, Prahlad said, well, Father, I learned all about how to make friends and kill your enemies. In other words, he could have just regurgitated what was in the school. But he didn't do that. He spoke truth to power, being fully confident of his protection by the Lord. And, of course, what he says, the Samara's verse, very famous verse, Tat Sadhu Munye, notice the same word, sadhu. In this case, sadhu means the best. Tat Sadhu Munye, Sudhava Hidehinam Sadasa Bhagvina Diyama Sagrahat, Hitvatvapatam Griyamandakupam, Vanam Gato Yad Hadamashayeta. Now, those words, Hadamashayeta, you have to visualize it just like darts entering into the body of Hiranyakashipu. What it means is one should take shelter of Hari, of Krishna. In other words, Father, you know, you're a nonsense. Here he is, a little 5-year-old boy with this huge demon, you know. He could crush him, seemingly, in his hand. And he's telling him that the best thing I've learned, Father, has nothing to do with what I learned in the school, you know. Best of the demons. He didn't even call him Father. Probably makes a point of that in the lecture. He didn't call him Father. He called him best of the demons, Asuryavayu, which is what he's called here, Asurarat, the emperor of the Asuras. Best for whom? You know, not best for the purpose of some material aggrandizement, but best for every living entity who is suffering in this world, always disturbed in mind because of having taken shelter and feeling so-called confident in the changeable material world. Asadgrahat, very important word, combination, means grabbing onto the impermanent. So I won't get too much into this verse. This is for tomorrow. But then he says, one should leave a materialistic household life, andakupam, griyam andakupam, and go to the forest. Prabhupada explains the commentator, that means Vrindavan, Mathura, and take shelter of Hari. So these are like, it's not what Hiranyakashipu wanted to hear, needless to say. But he didn't even blame Prahlad at this point. He blamed the teachers. He said, oh, just see how our enemies have infected the minds of this boy. You know, he was disturbed, but not super disturbed yet. So this is the first instance in which he reveals his true devotional nature. So how does that pertain to us? Now, we have been, you know, Srila Prabhupada came absolutely in the mood of Prahlad. I think anyone who studies Prahlad Maharaj's mood, and especially his prayers, where he talks about how I have no anxiety, I have no trouble, because any place I am, I can always chant your glories and be immersed in bliss. But I'm lamenting for those fools and rascals who are trying to enjoy Maya Sukhaya, this flickering material happiness. And therefore, he says in the next verse, I'm not going to leave them. Like most of these so-called yogis and meditators who immediately leave the big city. They go alone, vijane, without any people, so that they can meditate and attain liberation for themselves. He calls kama. This is a type of lust, desire for one's own elevation and the hell with everyone else. He calls it mukti kama. He says, I don't see anyone else but you, Lord Nrisimhadeva, who can save them. And therefore, I'll take the trouble of staying in the cities, in the case of Prahlad, so that I can preach. This is the way Prabhupada explains, and this is the mood of Prahlad. So Srila Prabhupada was in the exact same mood. He was situated in Vrindavan perfectly nicely. He could have just chanted like so many of his god brothers and others, set up a little temple and do a little preaching and boss, you know. But he had this injunction, he had this order from his spiritual master, he had Lord Chaitanya's promise, in every town and village on the earth, not just in India, my name will be known and chanted. So he felt that urgency, as well as an overflowing heart full of compassion for all these souls who had no knowledge of Krishna, their only shelter. And so he took the trouble of leaving Vrindavan, as we know, the great saga, Srila Prabhupada's trip to America and is starting this movement. And he spoke truth no matter what the situation was. His Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had sent others to the West earlier than Prabhupada, specifically to England. But they couldn't make much headway. And they came back, you know, and they were wearing Western clothes. And Prabhupada wondered, what is this? You know. In other words, they weren't empowered to change the minds of the conditioned souls they came in contact with there. For whatever reason, they were afraid to preach it as it is. They didn't have the shakti. But Prabhupada's great example for us as well, and his great quality, one of his great qualities, was that he never flinched from speaking as it is. Right? So many times, the devotees would, oh boy, what is Prabhupada going to say now? There's some press conference, and he says something, completely challenging about the government or about the moon or something like that. But this is what he understood to be the truth. What to speak of the political scene. Now that comes up here purported in this section about how politics is completely focused on this idea of friends and enemies, isn't it? And yesterday we had 9/11, right? The anniversary, 11 years. Now, it's all about friends and enemies. America, Asura-Rat, the emperors of the demons who are running this country, you have enemies. You have to have enough enemies to frighten the people so that they'll give you money and they'll give you their allegiance. Many of you are old enough to remember the Cold War. All of those years after World War II, build up Soviet Union, the enemy. And I remember as growing up, we had various, and you have to have a person behind it, right? There's Stalin, and then I was too young for Stalin, but Khrushchev, big guy banging his shoe on the table in the UN, bad guy you visualize with nuclear missiles coming out of his head, I'll bomb you, okay, we'll give you all the money, build up the American. Enemies. So then all of a sudden, to everyone's surprise but Srila Prabhupada's, this was amazing. I was sitting right over here in 1975, editing Back to Godhead, and we were putting the Prabhupada's conversations, philosophy conversations. He makes that point here, how he could talk on any point of philosophy, because he's enlightened by Krishna from within. So we came to Marx, Karl Marx, Marxism, right? Prabhupada had a lot to say about that, and in fact we broke it up into two parts. And I remember so distinctly how he predicted from, 2-3 days in Moscow that there'll be another revolution. It will not last. I can see the people are not happy. They're lining up, there's nothing on the shelves, right? he could see by testing one, just by a few days, he said it will not last. Nobody in the CIA, in the FBI, in the government predicted that the Soviet Union would collapse suddenly in the late 80s and early 90s. Prabhupada saw it. He could tell. So as soon as that happened, where's our enemy? We need our enemy. We don't want no peace dividend. This is the demons speaking. So we have to create new enemies. Oh, the terrorists, Al-Qaeda. See, they attacked us on 9/11. This is all planned out. I'm not going to get into the details here. But who benefited? Who benefited from this 9/11? Did Osama bin Laden benefit? Did the Muslims benefit? Did the Iraqis and the Afghanis benefit? Who benefited? The oil companies, the military industrial security complex. Billions and trillions of dollars spent. And it's still going on. Every so often they engineer the shoe bomber, the underwear bomber. They find some poor guy, Muslim, and say, hey, let's bomb the Sears Tower. Okay. Here's $50,000. Oh, okay. And then as soon as he moves, they catch him. Oh, we protected you from the Sears bomber. This is all planned. This is all trying to whip up the fear in America. This is exactly what they were teaching Prahlad. In the school. How to, the enemies and the friends, and how to get in power. Until Krishna finally comes and wipes it all away. And kills the demon Hiranyakashipu. So, Pollard could have, you know, mumbled something in that line, but no, he spoke exactly to the point, not caring what his father was going to do, you know, realizing that he was materially completely helpless, but feeling completely protected by Krishna. And this speaks to the idea of fear, because fear is the you know, there's so much fear out there and anxiety, right? People felt in the illusion of security, financial security. To them, that's what that means. Financial security and protection from violence, you know. But now what happened to the financial security? You know, is gone. All of a sudden their homes are worth less, right? And the Muslims are coming to get us, you know, right? But for a devotee, Narayana Paraksave Nakutashita Bibhyati. It said Prahlad is the perfect example of being fearless. Prabhupada also showed that, you know, to come to America at that age, you know, with no money, no support, completely fearless because he felt protected by Krishna. So, now I thought of another aspect of this, and that is that, you know, in this age it is said that the demons used to be born on different planets, and then they were in different countries, different areas, you know. But in this age, within the same heart, we all have, like, demonic tendencies. You know, I'm not trying to insult you. Just go to the Bhagavad Gita, 16th chapter, and you see, you know, are you ever feeling, Ishwaroham Mahambhogi? Yes, I'm in control. I'm enjoyer, at least in my little sphere, you know. These are demonic tendencies. So devotees, we're fighting against that. We have these two natures that are battling. So just like Prahlad, we need to strengthen the intelligence so that it can speak the truth strongly to our lower self, the mad mind, which has so many ideas of sense gratification, the senses, which are addicted to so many forms of sense gratification. This battle really needs to take place in our own hearts. And by hearing Bhagavatam, by discussing Bhagavatam, by living Bhagavatam, hearing from the right source, we can strengthen the intelligence. And the intelligence can be this, like this Prahlad, who can speak strongly, both internally and externally. The tendency in any religion, any true religion, is that over time, there tends to be a spectrum of those who are more serious and more dedicated and those who are less serious, less dedicated, you know. And the tendency is, over time, just as Krishna says, over time the science has been lost. Well, how does it get lost? The hard part, you know, of the philosophy, which is that we are completely helpless in this world, we're servants of Krishna, That sense gratification in any form is illusory and damaging to us, and that any desire other than to serve Krishna for his interest is illusory and maya, you know, is harmful. It's hard to sustain that all the time, right? And unless we're in the association, whether we voluntarily come into the association of those who will speak that philosophy strongly and the truth, and we're ready to listen, then we tend to get away from the strict practice of Krishna consciousness and compromise, you know, in various aspects. And so how do we combat that? How do we negate that? Well, by being very firmly determined. You know, first of all, by approaching a spiritual master, we need to subordinate our sense of independence, or get rid of our sense of independence by subordinating our will to the superior. This is one of the hardest things. The false ego is we would hold on to that like anything. But that was when Prabhupada was on the planet. Devotees, you know, many they really surrendered and just entered into his, you know, sphere of influence and his and got the mercy. You know, by being able, at least for some time, to be indifferent to sense gratification and chanting Hare Krishna, distributing so many books, performing so many sacrifices, starting temples, you know. How did that happen? By at least for some time, being really surrendered to a pure devotee. So that's always the principle. It's a constant principle. And in this day and age, it means, coming into the association of devotees, hearing this philosophy, studying it on our own, exposing ourselves to Srila Prabhupada's powerful preaching through his books, through his lectures. It's important to hear the voice of the pure devotee of Srila Prabhupada. He has his famous purport, how the voice is saturated with the saffron mercy particles. And when you hear that voice, it enters deep into the heart and can change your heart completely. So, but sometimes it's painful. We're going in this little direction and we read Prabhupada's books and it's banging us on the head. What are you doing? Why, you nonsense? No one likes to be in that position, so you maybe get, all right, I'll keep a little distant. And that's the greatest danger, keeping the distance. So, reading Prahlad is inspiring on many different levels. This is you're right in the middle of these chapters. And he's giving us an example, both externally and internally. This is how I see it. How we should be forthright in presenting the philosophy. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Saraswati Thakur said to Prabhupada, you preach in English, widely, go abroad. It will be good for you as well as those who hear you. And anyone knows, if you're in the fire, you meet some nice guest and you're able to give them Krishna content, they're responding. That's one of the most enlivening things there can be. Any book distributor knows. You meet someone who's a little receptive, takes the book. Maybe they, you keep in contact with them. They become a devotee. So, in other words, that means that you're channeling, if you want to use that word, this truth. And it's pure, and it's very enlivening to the soul, to you. And that's the mood of Prahlad. That was Prabhupada's ecstasy. You could see all those 12 years that we, knew him intimately after he left, constantly speaking, writing, preaching, meeting, writing letters. He was in ecstasy from giving out Krishna consciousness. So he gave that to us. He gave us that chance as well. And Prahlad is also giving his father a chance. He may not take it exactly in the right form. But through Prahlad, we also are witnessing. The whole idea is that now we can also get the benefit of Prahlad's teachings to his father, to his friends, and finally his prayers to Nrisimhadev. They're filled with realized knowledge. And this theme, speaking truth to power, not mixing the philosophy, repeating it as it's given us, and trying to live it just as Srila Prabhupada wanted us to live it. So, do we have any discussion on these points? I'll read the translation once again. Next verse. My dear King Yudhishthir, once upon a time, the king of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, took his son Prahlad on his lap and very affectionately inquired, my dear son, please let me know what you think is the best of all the subjects you have studied from your teachers. Judah Karma Prabhu.
Hari Bhav. So at one point in your discourse, you mentioned something to the effect that becoming Krishna conscious means giving up independence. And I think that's true, but is another way to say it, doesn't mean giving up independence means using independence correctly?
Okay. Thank you. I don't need to repeat the question. That was heard, right? So, thank you, Judah Karma Prabhu. So the idea is that Krishna is supremely independent. And we, being part and parcel of Krishna, have a minute independence. That's what we have. As our nature. When we misuse that minute independence and we turn away from Krishna and we turn our attention toward the external world, this is our bondage. We become bound by those things that we're become attached to. And the more we misuse that, the less independence we have. Human beings have a greater amount of free will and independence than animals, what to speak of plants and insects. They're just controlled by, you know, what they call instinct. We would say the super soul is just telling them. But they're locked in. But human beings, we have a choice. We've been given a choice. Serve Krishna or serve Maya. Now, when we misuse that independence, as I mentioned, then we suffer. When we properly use it by putting ourselves under Krishna, under his will and that of his representatives, bona fide representatives, then we actually become free from the bondage of illusion and from Maya. So it's almost like a paradox. In order to become truly free, we need to give up our so-called freedom in this material world and subordinate ourselves to Krishna. And Prabhupada speaks of it like that way. I just heard a lecture. The devotee is free to act because he is no longer in the thrall of matter, of material energy. So in one sense, you know, Prabhupada explains, we're not free, you know. Either we're going to be controlled by the external energy or the internal energy. Being controlled by the external energy means that we have the illusion of freedom, but we're tightly bound and we suffer birth and old age and disease. Voluntarily putting ourselves under the internal energy, Bhakti Devi, Srimati Radharani, means that we enjoy like anything because we're participating in Krishna's enjoyment by serving him. So that's what I meant by giving up our false independence. And really, like we had this one time, again, the BTG, when we came on the 200th anniversary of the independence, 1976, we had this article, I think it was Prabhupada's article, declaring our dependence on God, right? That was a declaration of independence. All right, independence from the king of England, maybe. But you could completely dependent on your senses and on your... Like there's that famous verse Prabhupada would quote, Kama dinam katina katita palita dunideshas. So for so many births, we have been obeying the demands of kama, of lust and anger and greed and all these things. And we've been very humble servants of them. You know, whatever they order, we follow spontaneously. But they've not been very kind to us. They've not shown us any mercy. And the result of obeying those orders is just more and more suffering. And they're never satisfied. Right? So now the devotee who happens to be Madhavendrapuri, he says, I'm giving these up. I'm rebelling against these masters. You know, because my intelligence has awoken. But we need a master. So then he says, Famayatak Shadanamaba Yammam the Yungsvatmadase. Now I'm approaching you, Yadupate, master of the Yadus, Krishna, and please engage me in your service. You are Abhayam, what is it? Shadanam Abhayam, the fearless shelter. You become free from fear, just like Pallad, by taking full shelter of Krishna. But that means to be the servant, so you're accepting Krishna's demands. But Krishna is giving you orders out of love. When he says in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Sarva dharma paritya mame kam sharanam vraja. He's not doing it so that he can have another slave and enjoy, you know. He's saying, give up all other dharmas, surrender unto me for your own good, you know. And come and, as Prabhupada says in the Yushupanda, come and join the rasa dance, you know. It's an invitation, but it does require that we place ourselves under Krishna and his representative. Archita Prabhu, you had a question.
Yes, sir. Thank you for a wonderful class and a nice answer to the Karma's question. I'm going to throw it a little different way. As long as I've known you over the last 4 decades, I don't think you've had any managerial positions, but this is kind of a managerial question. When Prabhupada was here, the temples were run by his desire as if in military discipline. In other words, when you joined the ashram, you didn't have a lot of freedom. You were told when to get up, what to do, where to be, at what time. And now, you know, over the years, things have gone, I think, in many places, just to the way opposite extreme, where devotees live in the ashram, they do just a little service, and then whatever else they want to do, they do. They have practically all day free. So I'm just wondering how to find that balance, because it doesn't work. It doesn't work. When the devotees have the freedom whether to come to class or not come to class, or they just don't learn. They don't go forward. You can see it practically. New devotees, if they don't really dive in like we did, I remember when we joined, it was immediately you started studying Bhagavad Gita and being pushed to learn and learn. Nowadays, they don't have that. People get upset if you push them and test them. And so I'm just wondering, where do we find that managerial balance where, you know, maybe it's not as tight as it was where you can't even breathe, you know, because many devotees snapped onto that. I saw personally some devotees snapped. It was just too much for them. They couldn't take being told every moment what to do. But then if you go to the other extreme, where you just, you know, you do a little service and then you do whatever the hell you want to do for the rest of the day, it doesn't work either. How do you find that balance?
Am I being drawn into a political conversation?
It's not political. It's just a practical question because you have experience. I know you've never been a manager. That's why I prefaced it. But, I mean, you must have some feelings on it.
Well, my remembrance of it was quite positive, you know, because I remember the days we joined Brooklyn Temple, Henry Street. And there was a schedule. And one of the most favorite things I remember is the evening program. You know, how everything kind of stopped, right? You remember that, Omkar? Yeah, when did it start? At 7 or 6? I think it was 7 was the RT. So it's like you understood, okay, everything stops at 6:30. You run back to the temple, you take a shower, you get ready for the evening, you run down the stairs and you go in. And everyone's there, you know. The lights are on as opposed to the morning program, which is more meditative, you know, the Mongol RT, which I loved also. But then, you know, you see all the devotees, and it was this Gaur Aarti, you know, you're celebrating the Mahaprakash and Lord Chaitanya there. And it was just like a blowout kirtan. And, of course, we had advantage. We had Jai Satchinanda, Vishnukada, Bhard Raj, and who else was there, you know, some other kirtanis. So, and then, you know, Bhagavad Gita class, it was just as strict as the morning, as I remember. You had to be there, you know, or you had to have a really good reason why you weren't. Yeah, afterward. Right. And then everyone would go downstairs for hot milk. Yeah, yeah. It seemed to be less military to me than like a family, right? It was like this family feeling. And you go down, you hear Krishna book, you know, and then, you know, the melatonin starts to kick in, and, you know, you're ready to go to take rest and, you know, dream about Krishna, and then you go. So, but the thing that kept it going is that it just seemed a lot, you know, a lot of the kirtan, I mean, it was the 3 hours a day. That was the standard. We went out every day. And that just smoothed everything over. You know, you got this big taste of bliss from the kirtan, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And you were ready to do so many austerities on that basis, you know, and toe the line, if you will, you know. That was one thing. Monka had one other thing to say. Go ahead, Omka. You raised your hand. You're okay? Okay, go ahead. Madhaji.
Basically, I know in the early days it was so much austerity, but it was blissful because it was that unity, and we wanted to do it one for Srila Prabhupada, and we all got enlivened seeing everyone else get enlivened, so it was electrifying. And my experience here, I love New Dwarka Dham. I love the management. I love all the devotees. I'm so happy being here. What I've come to understand is there's different age levels, and there's also different kinds of communication. Let's say a 50-year-old man, if he has a 20-year-old man bossing him around, telling him what to do, that's not healthy. Get up, get out, do this, do that. That's demeaning. That's very demeaning to his morale. And also, if there's someone saying, okay, you could go out, do your own thing, come back, and then he's sweating it. Where are these guys? Where is this guy? Oh, God, I let him go out, and now he's not coming back. I'm going to be in trouble. It's dysfunctional. It's like disorganized. So it's age levels, it's communication, it's like disharmony. It's not criticism, but it's the way it's a different
yeah. dynamic than we had. Let's leave it at that, okay?
It's austerity. It's austerity and complete communication positive for Prabhupada and our guru.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Sorry.
I'm getting a lot of interesting ideas.
I think Omkar touched on it. It was our love for Srila Prabhupada. He inspired us, he empowered us. And just from a little association with him, it was so much so that everybody worked as a unit to please him. And this is what Prabhupada wanted.
Yeah.
So we did it.
Yeah. And the thing is, it wasn't just Prabhupada. It said, when I came, of course, I was lucky Prabhupada came a few weeks later. But those who were inspired by Prabhupada, that was catching also. You got that. Prabhupada was playing all the time. Prabhupada said, you'd only hear. You know, that was really the unifying factor, and it's still a unifying factor. We have to bring, Sureshwar Prabhu, I don't know if he came here, but he has this nice seminar on Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, to reinstate in our hearts, this Prabhupada consciousness is really the inspiration for everything. It's not easy, but it's possible. Okay, one more, and then I think we should end. Go ahead, Satchitanoy.
Prabhu. Thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
First, I would just want to say that in regards to these questions, that there's a beautiful article written by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj about who is qualified to live in the math. And when you read that article, who is qualified to live in the math?
Yeah,
we don't even get too close to the strictness of what he was demanding from his people at that time.
Yeah.
Then I was reflecting. I was, wow, nowadays is different. Now you were giving a nice analysis about your experience from 1973 on. But if you heard the experience of the first ones, 66, 60, 67, 68, 69, it's a little bit different because I've been reading. There were no restrictions. There were sometimes not even the regulatory principles. But anyway, so my question is different now. The sadhus, they have different moods. Even the Mahayanas, like Prahlad Maharaj, were reading about him. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a different mood. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, his own song, had a completely different mood. In essence, it's the same, but the way we're presenting it, he appears to be that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was having so much trouble from the followers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and even among the other sadhus. So my point is that nowadays also we have, in Srila Prabhupada's East Coast society, different moods. And I personally, when I read some mood of a devotee, if being very strict and very fundamental, orthodox, I like it. But sometimes when I see the mood of some other devotee who is presenting Krishna consciousness for the embracing and attracting the worldly outside people, I also like it.
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking, wow, we can appreciate both angles. If we can accommodate those things, there will be not so much difficulty understanding. So can you please speak just about that?
I really can't say much on that. It's the principle of unity and diversity. And if the sadhana is strong, it has to be there. If one is fully engaged in that, then how much to accommodate, the mass, and what to do on the inside to keep everyone strict and on the proper, that will be revealed. But it's not easy. In the old days, we had Prabhupada. He was a sounding board. You write him a letter, you get personal instruction. He set up everything. Now we don't have that same voice as it was. Prabhupada's still here in so many ways. But it's more difficult. And the movement is, huge. I mean, when you take in all of the, members inside and outside the temples in India and all those things, it's a vast movement. But it's, it's still going on, and we can try our best to get enlightened by Krishna how we can push on our little corner of it. And that's all I have to say. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Hare Bol. Hare Krishna.